This episode of Tomahawk is brought to you by Bevel, the first and only shaving system designed specifically for coarse, curly hair and sensitive skin. Joe, I tell you what, man, not a lot of products I use on a consistent basis because I'm all over the place on my schedule. Bevel is one of them. Never leave my house without it. All over the country, making sure my skin is great for all the times I'm on TV as both a face model and the most entertaining man in the world.
That's actually fake news that you're a model, but for a limited time, you can still get 15% off your next shipment with Bevel. Check out getbevel.com/tomahawk. Promo will be automatically applied at checkout. That's getbevel.com/tomahawk. Coming up on today's show, the Bears defense is haunting Kirk Cousins' dreams. The Saints keep marching and prayers up for Alex Smith and his gruesome leg injury. Of course, we talk Condoleezza Rice as the next head coach of the Browns. And we hear if Natty Ice has a new jersey chasing boyfriend for tonight's awesome Rams versus Chiefs game. All that and much, much more coming up on the Tomahawk Show.
Hey, this calls for Hawk and your illustrious 74 career start. Just wanted to let you know that we used to play basketball together at a rec center when you were 14. Hope that makes us friends, and have a good rest of your day.
Joe, just leaving you a voicemail to let you know that me and my wife think it was funny that you always wore big football pants. We called you Dumpy Butt. We love you, but your football pants were too big. Enough with the dumpy butt. Go Browns.
Hey, what's up? It's Jeff, huge fan of the show. Shout out to Joe and Hawk, Natty Ice and Zerm. Just wanted to say thanks for being a part of my everyday week. And wanted to make fun of Hawk for putting steak up on his ketchup. I didn't know what to make fun of you for because you're so humble. But dude, that's just weird. As always, go Hawk yourself.
Welcome to the Tomahawk Podcast, presented by Uninterrupted. Make sure you're interacting with us on social, at Tomahawk Show, on Instagram and Twitter. Use our hashtag Tomahawk. Hit us up with thoughts, comments, and most importantly, and we haven't done this as much as we should have, make sure you are subscribing to the podcast and also rating us 5 stars. We look at our average numbers per episode, and it's at like 1.7 billion per episode, but yet we only have a little under 6,000 5-star ranking. So if you're listening right now, stop what you're doing, pull it up on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen, hit 5 stars, and then continue on. I'm joined, as always, by the humblest of co-hosts, 26-time Pro Bowler, Joe Thomas is in the building. And before, Joe, you start talking, I'm going to introduce our homegirl, Nat, who has another date tonight, round two, and Cleveland Zerm, the man, the myth, the legend. How is everybody doing?
Hawk, we're doing good. Yeah, I think everybody here is jealous of Nat because she gets to go see Rams-Chiefs, which is the game of the year in person. So I don't know what time flights out of Cleveland to LA are, if I can still make it today, but I'm looking into it and I might come crash that party.
I'm super excited. I get to see my Patrick Mahomes in action.
Oh. So I'm my Patrick Mahomes.
I'm super
wow.
excited. No, I'm just kidding. I just found out he has a girlfriend, which is super sad, but whatever.
I remember you saying he could be Man Crush Monday vibes. This is like weeks and weeks ago.
I know. I mean, he's still
he's thrown like 20 more touchdowns since then. So now he's my Patrick Mahomes. How about that?
Yeah, no, I'm really excited to go to that game, watching the two best teams go at it. So I will keep the Tomaflock updated.
Well, what I really want to know is, are you more excited to go watch the football game or are you more excited for the date?
Well, I don't. Who are these sources that told you it was a date?
Streets are talking, Matt. They always talk. That's one thing about the streets. They never stop talking.
I'm more excited for the game, to be completely honest.
So it's not a date?
Well, no, it's a bestie date. It's a girl date.
Oh, okay.
Oh, sorry. So sources were incorrect. All right.
Sources are incorrect. Never listen to the sources. You have to go straight to the actual source.
Does that mean that the Jersey Chaser boy toy from last week is out of the picture? And
no,
it didn't work out? Or where are we right now with that situation?
That's a good question.
He's not out of the picture. He's still in the picture, just waiting for date number two. I don't know when or what it's going to be, but
Is the ball in his court or is it in your court?
The ball is in my court, so
okay.
I'm open to suggestions of what we should do next.
Okay, the Rams-Chiefs game would be way better than the Clippers game, but whatever you're into. Another question, has it been difficult on your relationship living this out in the public eye as two influencers, as a celebrity couple? Is it with the thousands and millions of people who are listening and waiting for updates on your relationship? Has it been a strain?
It's very difficult, to be honest. I don't know how celebrities do it. It's so hard, yeah, because everybody knows, everybody wants to know the details of your life. And I just, I can't handle that pressure.
I get it. I get it.
Well, hey, before we get into the hard-hitting NFL chatter, we got to talk about how awesome those listener voicemails have been. And we got to react a little bit because this week's, I think, was far superior to anything we've gotten so far. And up until this point, they were still pretty good. But I'm pretty pumped right now that our Tomahawk fans are throwing more voicemails our direction.
Me too. And I appreciate someone acknowledging that my 14 basketball prowess. At 14 years old, I thought legit it was me and LeBron James in competition in life. And I thought, like, man, it's just going to be a race to who gets to be categorized as the GOAT sooner. So I'm interested to who that is, A, that I was playing in the rec league with. B, obviously it makes us best friends. And C, you should call back and give an assessment of my game for the Tomahawk listeners to let them know what I was working with at my teen years.
Joe, how does it feel to be called dumpy butt on a voicemail? That's what I want to know.
You know what? I actually have kind of grown accustomed to being made fun of for my baggy pants. That was like the one thing everybody on the team liked to tease me about. But what I can't figure out is how wearing tight pants that make you run slower is a good thing. Maybe, Hawk, you can explain that to me, because last time I checked, ninjas were the quickest, fastest, sleekest things on Earth, and they wore baggy pants. Just saying.
You know what? Anytime you can avoid being called dumpy butt, you should probably go all in. So I don't know if it makes you faster or slower. The Instagram name dumpy butt is taken. I've already checked for you, so don't worry about that. But I will
see,
say,
that's where I feel like linemen and receivers sort of diverge a little bit, is a receiver will do something that willingly makes him worse at his job if it makes him look cool. Like wearing the visor that's super dark that you can't see the football, or like wearing the bad shoes that look cool, but they're not like really good fitting on your feet and they don't have good traction. A receiver is willing to give up a lot of success on the football field for coolness factor. And a lineman is willing to give up all coolness for even like the most slight advantage in athleticism.
Not me. I was like and I think that's why me and you got along, because I was like the O-line version of a receiver. I didn't look sweet. I had duck feet. My pants would get dumpy from time to time. I actually passed up. This is a true story. In 2015, Adidas offered me, and it wasn't big money, but the contract was like 50 grand, like a 50 grand contract of like, you know, for whatever. But I had to pat, and at the time I didn't have a shoe deal. I was getting Nike, like just free gear. It was all free. There was no cash involved. But I told Adidas no, because the shoes weren't comfortable and I didn't trust the gloves at the time. And it was more in my head than anything. Going back, I probably would have took the deal and said we were going to suck that year anyway, so I might as well get some money while we're all sucking. But yeah, so I was not sweet, I guess, was this more of that story.
You looked sweet in my book, though, so.
Oh, thanks.
Don't worry about it. You look sweet in those Nikes.
Oh, thanks, dumpy butt.
Huck, okay, this was also in the voicemail, and I also need to address this. Ketchup on steak? Why?
Yeah. And I don't know why. Ketchup is good. And
do you put anything else on your steak? Like, do you put any other sauce, like barbecue sauce or anything?
No. I put barbecue sauce on my burgers. I put ketchup on my steaks. I put hot sauce on my pizza and my lasagna and in my spaghetti. I don't know. It just tastes good. I just think everything is better. What's the difference between putting ketchup on a steak and ketchup on a hamburger?
I feel like ketchup doesn't belong on anything. I hate ketchup.
Oh, wow.
Wow, that's a take.
What?
This is
the most alarming news I've heard on the Tomahawk show ever.
I hate tomatoes. Anything.
What?
With tomatoes.
That's weird that you equate tomatoes to ketchup. I've never even made the distinction.
What condiment do you enjoy then? Because first of all, steak and ketchup, I don't love it, but I get it. I've done it. You know, we've all had a steak that's a little chewy.
I feel like steak should just be eaten by itself.
Yeah, like
whatever
the purist,
seasoning comes on it.
Yeah, the purist is going to say like, oh, you're ruining it and all this stuff. And, you know, I usually enjoy my steak without ketchup, but I'm not against if you're having like a tough piece or maybe something that's not real flavorful. If you're having some French fries, to dip it in a little bit of ketchup, I'm okay with that. I'm not like a hater like that.
Nice.
But to say you don't like ketchup, is offensive in my book.
Sorry to offend you.
That's
what
grounds
condiments
for firing.
Do you use?
Mayonnaise. She looks like a mayonnaise
no,
person.
I love mayonnaise too, though.
So. I don't.
No, mayonnaise is the best. You know what? Can we, for one second, before we go any further, there is a there is a movement on the internet to hate on mayonnaise. And I am against
yeah,
it.
Yeah, because there's like videos of people eating it with a spoon.
Well, that's white people.
Love that's different. Those people should be locked up. But I'm just saying, in terms of in general, mayonnaise is good, and I don't understand why it's popular now to hate on mayonnaise, and I'm not here for
okay,
it.
Okay, well, now I have a follow-up question. So Zerm, in your Twitter bio, it says you're a sandwich enthusiast.
Yes.
So
correct.
Please elaborate on what that means, and do you put mayonnaise on every single sandwich?
Mayonnaise on a sandwich is very crucial, so yes. Number two, I am a sandwich enthusiast because Cleveland has as Joe and Hawk both know, has a very good underrated food scene and a lot of really good sandwiches. And so I bump around the city from sandwich shop to sandwich shop, trying them, critiquing them, tasting everything I can. And that is how I became, in my long 29 years of life, a sandwich enthusiast.
It's ridiculous.
Where is your favorite sandwich in Cleveland?
Wow, that Joe, great question. My answer...
I'm glad
stop
you
stalling,
asked.
Just tell me.
My answer to that, okay.
Typical stall.
There is a... No, no stall. I just don't want to, you know, I don't want to get
more
angry.
Stalling.
You're still stalling.
I don't want to get angry.
He's stalling by saying he's not stalling.
3 minutes into the question,
right, right. Here it is. There's a place on Coventry Road in Cleveland Heights called Grum's Sandwich Shop. It has been there since the 1970s. You walk in and it looks like you're about to walk into something real weird, but it is it has a sandwich called the Hot Grumster, and it is one of my favorite things in the world. In fact, I usually would get it when I would go to my dad's on Sundays to watch guys like Joe Thomas and Andrew Hawkins play football while I ate my Hot Grumster. So shout out to Grum's. Hot Grumster is delicious.
Hot Grumsters.
Sounds
listen,
good.
Everybody listening, make sure you call us, leave us voicemails, so we can get them on the show. We can talk about them. It's like the funnest part of us recording. Firm, you got the number?
I do, yeah. So if you want a chance to be featured on the intro, like those fine people that called us were just featured, you can leave us a voicemail at 440-628-1376. One more time, that's 440-628-1376. And if you're, you know, if you're good enough and you want to be best friends with Andrew Hawkins, leave us a voicemail and you may hear yourself on a upcoming episode of the Tomahawk Show.
There you go.
I'd
exactly.
Like our listeners to tell us what their favorite sandwich is, wherever city you're listening from, because I feel like we have fans in England. I've talked to some of them on Twitter. We've got fans over in Japan. We really have fans all over the globe. And so I'm interested to hear, because I'm such a foodie, I love hearing about, like, what is your favorite sandwich in wherever you live? That would be kind of cool.
That is a really cool question.
And before we move on, before Hawk bores himself to death,
no,
I want to hear.
Tell me more about your illustrious mayonnaise.
Yeah, right. I want to hear if Natty Ice does not like ketchup, what condiment does she prefer?
And what the fuck do you put on a burger?
Good point.
On a burger, I like Thousand Island sauce. That's good.
Mm. That is the most Silicon Valley thing I've ever heard in my life.
Wow. What? Why?
Oh,
I just
gosh.
I don't like ketchup. I don't really like mayo. I mean, sorry, mustard either. Huh. On a sandwich?
Are you even American?
Who do you cheer for at the baseball game when the ketchup and the mustard race?
They're important
Thousand Islands?
Neither.
No one has a Thousand Islands race at any sporting event.
Mascot?
Oh, man.
So what's the answer? What's your favorite condiment?
I really don't know. Like, the only condiments that I can think of are ketchup, mayo, and mustard. And I'm just not a big fan of any of those three. Like, what are other condiments that I can
think of? She's a work in progress.
Ranch, honey mustard.
Oh, I like ranch. Forgot about ranch.
So
ranch
you can say
good.
Ranch because ranch is pretty universal.
Ranch
you can
is
put
universal.
That on
yeah.
Yeah. Like I'll dip my fries in ranch instead of ketchup.
Do white people it's like acceptable. Hot sauce?
Yeah, I like hot sauce, but it's definitely like more of a black cultural thing, like way popular.
I feel like
and it's almost cool.
White culture is mayonnaise. Black culture is hot sauce, and ranch is like the thing we can all come together.
Yeah, that's
on.
How we all.
Exactly.
That's how we.
That's
it. Yep.
That's how we bring it all. That's how we wrap it all together. There. Natty Ice also put the tomahawk in her Twitter profile, which is
finally
a huge step in our relationship as podcast family. It took her a while. She was the last
the world
one.
Know.
But it was like she's claiming us, which may or may not help her relationship with whoever this weirdo is that's jersey chasing her. Joe, let's take a break and talk about our sponsor, Bevel, once again. And I'm not kidding. You know how you felt when you got a beer sponsorship because you love beer so much? That's how I feel about getting a Bevel sponsorship, because it's a product that I really use for the last 4 years of my life. Bevel is the first and only end-to-end shaving system that gives you a consistently smooth, irritation-free shave. It's dermatologist recommended and clinically tested to help reduce and prevent razor bumps, discoloration, and irritation.
You know, I always was pretty impressed with your edge. You always had a nice fresh shave, and that was one thing I could say about you. Football player, he's okay, but when it came to shaving your face, you were always an A-plus student in my book. Over 90% of Bevel users noticed improvement in their skin and razor bump reduction. Bevel is a good look. Level up your grooming routine so you can look as good as Hawk with Bevel Shave System.
Also, the Bevel Trimmer is a GQ award winner, just like myself, and every barber's go-to product. Now you can own one yourself. With the holidays coming up, get one for a friend. Experience cordless grooming, easy gap adjustments, and next-level lineups. Each clipper includes a blade, blade oil, microfiber bag, brush, and a charger. Not kidding, life-saving product. I used to get irritation on my skin growing up, and so I would never shave. Like, my dad told me not to shave because my skin would get irritated or bumps. I was finally able to use straight razor products and a trimmer because of Bevel. Life-saving.
And now you're a beautiful face model, so it seems to have all come full circle. Make sure to get your Bevel trimmer and shave system today at getbevel.com. For a limited time, get 15% off your next shipment with Bevel. Head over to getbevel.com/tomahawk. Promo will be automatically applied at checkout. That's getbevel.com/tomahawk.
Let's get into some football talk. I think it's time.
All right, guys, let's dive right into our first segment, and that is Three and Out. Here we go. And the reason I'm being ridiculous is because our producer has said we need to emphasize the segments much more clearly. So here is the emphasis on Three and Out.
Dun, dun, dun. Dun, dun, dun,
dun. All right. You guys ready? The Bears defense is legitimately terrifying. Kirk Cousins looking like the average quarterback we all knew on the Tomahawk show that he would be. Vikings' most disappointing team in the NFL. Potentially. What do you think, Hawk?
Yeah, they're disappointing, but I think it was a lot of PR anyway. Like, we said that from the beginning. We were never super sold on Kirk Cousins. You know, the play calling hasn't been great. They're, like, bottom three in running the ball, which is the same Oakland that we had in 2015 was the same situation. You just can't air it out. You get a lot of those yards and a lot of those points late in games when you're kind of already out of it, like we watched last night. The defense of the Bears is legit. Khalil Mack, one of the best defenders. He changes the game. He takes the ball away. He has sacks. He's literally good in every phase of the game. The biggest, it's more of a surprise for me that the Chicago Bears are who they are than the fact that the Minnesota Vikings aren't nearly as good as they were a year ago.
So what do we think the Bears defense ranks in the NFL?
Statistically?
No, I'm not saying statistically. I'm saying if you're matching up everybody in the NFL, defense versus defense, how do the Bears shake out?
I have them probably top five. Just Khalil Mack alone, man. The dude is like, there's good defenses. There's really, really good defenses, sound defenses who play really good football. And then there's the Chicago Bears who do that. And Khalil Mack can take the ball away, can cause an interception for a touchdown. They're scoring points. They're literally having those, I forget what the name is that the coaches use, game changing. I don't know what they would always say the Saturday before the game that we needed to do, and we never did actually get them on Sunday. But you get what I'm saying.
Win is your answer, Alan.
Game winning plays. That's what I was looking for.
Win the game.
But yeah, I mean, Khalil Mack alone makes any defense top five scariest. And there's Oakland Raiders fans who'll be like, no, we weren't anything with Khalil Mack. We weren't great. Well, have you watched yourselves this year? That's the answer I would say to that.
Well, how short are Oakland Raiders fans' memories that 2 years ago they were like the class of the AFC when Jack Del Rio was there right before Derek Carr broke his leg? This was a team that potentially was going to go to the Super Bowl. They had offensive stars. They were scoring points. Their defense was balling out. And all of a sudden, Derek Carr breaks his leg, and then they get rid of Khalil Mack, and they're a completely different team. They're the worst team in the NFL right now.
They're terrible, man. And the worst part about it is, and this is the NFL, it doesn't make sense. The cycle just continues, and nobody ever really cares. No one is ever like, oh, that didn't quite make sense. We should probably revisit that or change the way we do things. But no. So Del Rio has them to, you know, whatever their record was, and was it 2015? Is that when they were
2 years
really good?
Ago, I think. It wasn't whenever, no, it was 16, right? Because last year they were crappy, so he got fired. But yeah. The year before that was when they were really good.
Whatever it was, Derek Carr was about to be the MVP. They were really good. The next year, it was a letdown. They weren't nearly as good. Derek Carr was coming off of an injury, so they fired the coach for John Gruden, basically saying it's your fault that they're not good anymore. Otherwise, we wouldn't be making a coaching change. That same coach comes in with the same players. They suck. He trades people away, and now he's saying, oh, they're not that good. Well, if they're not that good for you, why do we not have that same filter when the last guy was here and he was saying, why are we blaming him? And now it's all, now we have to say, oh, we're blaming the players now because you just got here. That doesn't make any sense. There's not any logic to it, but that's the game of football.
Yeah, I agree with your takes. And going back to the reason we were talking about them in the first place, I think the Bears have the best defense in the NFL, followed closely by the Cowboys. For second down. Before I give you a chance to say I'm an idiot, we're going to move on to second down.
All right. The Saints. Let's talk about the Saints. The Saints, in our second down, the Saints might have the best offense in the NFL. They killed the Eagles 41-7. Third straight week, the Saints have scored 40 or more points. Is this by far the best offense in the NFL?
Well, you got to say right now they are. The way that they've been scoring points is just outrageous. And even though I don't think the Eagles' defense is as good as they were last year, to me, the Eagles' defense was the best defense in the NFL last year. And I know they were scoring a lot of points down the stretch when they won the Super Bowl. But to me, the defense was outstanding, lights out, front to back. They had unbelievable front seven that could rush the passer. They could stop the run. They would keep them in every game no matter what. And they're just not playing that well anymore. But still, to give up 41 points to the Saints is really alarming, and you need to make some changes out there. But the Saints, probably without a doubt.
Probably without a doubt.
Contradictory.
Definitely a big maybe, 100%
definitely maybe,
possible.
Definitely maybe they are the best offense in the NFL right now. They are absolutely.
I have a quick question for you guys, because this interests me for you guys as former players. So it was fourth and sixth. And the Saints could have just kicked a field goal. They're already up like four touchdowns. Instead, Sean Payton sends the offense back on the field. They get Alvin Kamara matched up on a linebacker, and they just throw him a little go route for a touchdown, which I thought was, I tweeted, I said, man, that's just rude. You're just piling on. If you guys were on the the Eagles yesterday, and you saw them coming out throwing for a touchdown on like fourth and six, you're already in field goal range, are you guys pissed, or are you guys just like, look, we can't stop them. I don't know what to do.
I'm more like, we can't stop them. It's not their fault. They're better than us. That would be my take. There's no handshake. Hey, okay, it's all right. You're really killing us. Just kick the field goal. No, it's whatever. Like, it's football. I don't mind it. Joe might have a different take.
No, I agree, actually. To me, it reminds me of the Patriots. You know, forever and ever, Tom Brady's up by 40 points, and they're still airing it out. And what I think that does is it builds a mentality that we don't care what anybody else is doing. It's about us. And we're going to be the same people every single time we strap it on. We're going to try to score as many points as we can. And I don't care what the scoreboard is. This isn't youth football. This is not trying to make the other guys feel good about it. Even in a big blowout like that, you're trying to work on things. You're trying to be the same offense all the time. And if you ever take your foot off the gas pedal, you are missing an opportunity to continue to improve as a great offense. And in this league, I thoroughly believe that if you ever take your foot off the gas pedal, you lose momentum and it's hard to regain it, because you always have to be getting better and improving in this game just to stay where you are. It's like one of those things. It's like
it's like when you put ketchup on your steak and then you're like, oh, I actually don't want to eat this.
Yeah, it's a disaster.
Yeah. And then you're four steaks in and you're like, man, I should stop. I think I actually love the ketchup and the steak's not that good. But no, Here's why I give the edge to the Saints over the Rams. When I go position for position, all right, first, they both have good play callers, right? Sean Payton, Sean McVay, two good play callers. We'll call that a neutral. Quarterback position, I'm going Drew Brees over Goff. At the running back position, Todd Gurley is the best, but when you mix in Ingram and Alvin Kamara together, it's equal at the worst, and I honestly might give the edge to the other guys because there's two bodies. At the receiver position, while the Rams have a pretty good receiving core, and I feel like Goff does look better because of the play calling, I feel like Mike Thomas was a beneficiary of Drew Brees and Sean Payton until I seen this number from yesterday, which is freaking wild. Mike Thomas is catching balls at a 90% catch rate. Now, what that means is 90% of the time that they throw him the football, it's a catch. That is a ridiculous stat. I think the best all time is like 80% in like the 1950s. And then Wes Welker had like 77% that year he went off with Tom Brady. But to be catching at a 90% catch rate is ridiculous. I'll give, for the Cleveland fans, some more context. Do you know who has the best catch rate since 99 is the Cleveland Brown? It's my favorite stat.
Let me guess. Andrew Hawkins.
You know what that catch rate is.
75%.
Cold.
16%.
What is it, Andrew?
Closer than. No, 58% is the highest catch rate any Cleveland Browns receiver over the last 20 years.
That's pathetic. You need to get on the jugs machine, kid.
But that's everybody. That's literally every receiver that's ever come through there.
No, I tell you why. Bottom line is the Saints are better than the Rams when you're comparing the two right now. And I'm telling you because Cooper Kupp tore his ACL, and the Rams' offense will not be the same the rest of the season.
Can't argue that.
Third down, you guys. I've avoided watching the replay of this injury because I don't do well with these things. But Alex Smith, quarterback for the Washington Redskins, has a pretty gruesome leg injury where his foot looked like it was going the wrong way after he got tackled yesterday. He is going to have surgery today, I believe. He's out for the rest of the season. Colt McCoy, former Cleveland Brown, and I believe the one quarterback Joe Thomas said did not have enough time to truly flourish in Cleveland, is going to be presumably starting the rest of the year, and he's playing his first game this Thursday night on Thanksgiving, or Thursday afternoon, against the Cowboys. Where are you guys with the Redskins? Do you think Colt McCoy, will there be any drop-off from Alex Smith to Colt McCoy? Are you guys Colt McCoy believers?
Well, I'm a Colt McCoy believer, but clearly, I think there's going to be some drop-off just because Alex has been the guy that's been getting all the first-team reps. He's been the guy that's been installed since he signed there. And so it's going to take probably a little while before Colt gets down timing and rhythm with his receivers and with the offensive play caller, because every offensive play caller has their own little fingerprint and their own like package of plays that they like to call for a certain quarterback because it utilizes their skill set to the best of their advantage. And so it's going to take a little while for Jay Gruden to kind of figure out exactly how he likes to call a game for Colt versus Alex Smith. But with that being said, Colt's been around Jay Gruden a long time, so they already have a good rapport, and I think they're going to get up to speed really quickly. And I don't see to the naked eye that you're going to see a big drop-off between Alex and Colt.
I think there's going to be a drop-off because Alex Smith is a better quarterback than Colt McCoy. And that's my expert analysis.
Okay, I think we're pretty much kind of saying some of the same stuff. But I do think Colt is good enough at this stage in his career to be able to lead that team to the playoffs. I think he's going to play really well. He's going to surprise a lot of people. Because if you ever look, when every time Colt has come in, whether it be an injury or blowout or in the preseason, he's played really well. I mean, when they were looking to replace Kirk Cousins this offseason, there were some people within that organization who actually thought that they were going to give the job to Colt and that they weren't going to bring in Alex Smith because they had that much confidence in his ability. And mark my words, they're going to win that division and they're going to go to the playoffs with Colt McCoy.
I like Colt McCoy. I do think he was a better option than bringing Alex Smith and giving him all that money for the short amount of time he's going to be there. Especially passing up on taking Kirk Cousins, I feel like they're all the same people. There were people, like you said, that went to Colt McCoy over Kirk Cousins when they thought he wasn't playing well. So I won't be surprised if when Colt goes in there and plays well. My question is, what does the team around him think? Like, when you lose a quarterback, like, as you know, it kind of demoralizes your team. So is there going to be enough motivation and belief in the locker room to give Colt McCoy the best chance to do all the things that you just predicted he's going to do?
No, I totally believe there is. And being around Colt, being a good buddy and being a guy that's played with him, he has like a really high character and level of leadership that you see from elite quarterbacks. And he has a really good ability to get guys to buy in and believe in what he's selling. When he came in as a rookie in Cleveland, I forget, it was Jake Delhomme got hurt, then Seneca Wallace got hurt, and then Colt comes in. He got us all believing, and now we didn't win a ton of games that year, but did beat the Saints in New Orleans, and then we came back, I think it was the next week, and we beat Tom Brady in spectacular fashion in Cleveland with Colt as a quarterback. So he can do some good things. He's a really good leader. He's a guy that can get players to buy in. He's going to get the most out of all the guys around him. And the only thing that concerns me is the offensive line situation in Washington. They were good enough to get Alex Smith snapped in half like a toothpick. Are they going to be able to block well enough for Colt McCoy to allow him the ability to go and show off his skill set?
Was that the what's the nastiest injury you've ever seen in a game, Joe? Or in, not even in a game, in general, that you've ever been a witness to? Like in person.
In person.
Not like things you Googled on Yahoo. Googled on Yahoo.
And my Instagram feed. Sense,
but continue.
I honestly, I can't remember because it's so disturbing in my mind that I don't usually try to look at it. Because the longer I went in my career, the more I was disturbed by big injuries. You know, when I was a youngster, I kind of maybe had this invincibility feeling about me where like watching big injuries on TV or like seeing it happen in person didn't really affect me. But as I got older, I was like, man, this game ain't worth it. You know, like sitting there and watching some of those big injuries that the NFL has had in the last few years. I mean, specifically watching Ryan Shazier, he broke his back and just laying there, he couldn't move his legs. I'm like, man, this man might never be able to walk the rest of his life over a game.
Yeah, I was at that game.
This ain't worth it anymore. Like it was like very disturbing, and it really made me question, why do we play this game in the first place? Like people shouldn't be going out on a Sunday and being carted off never to walk again, or even be really hard to get back to being the same person you ever were.
Yeah, that was a disgusting one. I also was at the Cavs Celtics when Gordon Hayward snapped his leg. I was like three seats up with my son. I was there too.
Oh boy.
It was disgusting.
I remember the reaction of the crowd, like just like the hush that fell over everybody after. It was just like I will never forget that.
It was horrible.
Seeing those.
Good segue into Cleveland sports here. We got the Cleveland Browns report that there was some scuttlebutt on Sunday that Condoleezza Rice was a candidate for the head coaching vacancy and that they would look to interview her. Joe, was this you that spread this rumor? Is it true? And what can you tell us about the situation?
Well, it was interesting to me. So this weekend in Wisconsin, it's the opening of the gun deer season. And so it's like a holiday. Like, nobody goes to school. Everyone goes with your family to your like little deer camp. And
you go kill fuzzy animals.
You drink beer and don't see any deer, which is pretty typical. So it's more about the beer drinking and the camaraderie. But one of my buddies, or my cousin, he showed me his phone with this news story. It was like Browns to interview Condoleezza Rice for head coach. And instantly, first of all, I thought it was a joke. And then he said it was from Adam Schefter. And I go, well, it was probably from like the fake
Adam Schefter.
Clearly the Browns aren't going to seriously interview candidates for head coach that have no coaching experience. Like, I understand when you hire a coordinator, you're going out on a limb like, okay, he's never been a head coach, but we think he's been a great coordinator. He's got a great scheme. He's been a good leader. He's, you know, a good leader of men, and he can motivate. But to seriously interview somebody for a role that they've never had anything similar in their entire life, obviously there's more to it. Was it a joke? Probably not. Was it a way for the Browns to get some like easy positive PR?
Is that positive PR? Because I don't feel like it came across as very positive on the social media I was looking at.
Well, that, like somebody had to put it out there from the Browns, I would think. I mean, Adam Schefter, let's put it this way. There's plenty of bozos out there in the social media world that are technically NFL reporters that throw a lot of shit against the wall that are completely made up or total rumors, right? It's basically TMZ reporting, but Adam Schefter is not one of those guys. He's not just going to go run with something that's total BS. But this story, clearly, there couldn't have been anybody in the NFL that looked at that and said, yeah, I think there's a chance the Browns hire Condoleezza Rice.
Right. I think they probably do want her part of the organization in some form or fashion. Look, she loves
– oh, yeah.
She's a big Browns fan. We know that. But also her father was a football coach. She grew up around the game. She's on the college football playoff committee. She either ran it or was some –
I think she's on, like, the board or whatever.
Yeah, whatever it is. So I could see them, like, trying to segue something into her being a consultant or whatever, something a part of the organization. As it pertains to coaching, do I think somebody could come off without ever being a head coach and be a head coach? The answer is yes. Do I think
– Well, clearly. It happens all the time. Wait a second. Let me back you up. Are you saying could somebody who's never been a head coach be a good head coach, or somebody who's never coached be a good head coach?
I think that someone who has never coached could be a good head coach. Here's why. Walk with me on this one. I don't think Condoleezza Rice would be right, because here's the thing you have to be able to do. You have to be able to not just motivate and manage men. You have to motivate and manage men who have no prior experience in a work world. So while Condoleezza Rice could run my company, Hawk Development Corporation, headquartered in the epicenter of all business, where we have businessmen and we're just printing money, hand over fist, the amount of business we're bringing in. And wow. She could tell this person to do that because she's brilliant, she's smart. You do this, you do that. And people have a certain way they conduct themselves in business environments that understand the hierarchy, leadership, how to behave. In football, it's not like that. These guys are testosterone-driven. They're good guys, don't get me wrong, but the environment is completely different. Even me, transitioning to the business world, there's certain things that I've like had to check myself on that just don't fly there. I can't get mad when someone disrespects me and say, yo, I'll break your teeth, bro. Like, I can't do that in the business world. That's a locker room thing. So I say that to say, but I think somebody, here's why I think it could work. Very long-winded way of saying this. If somebody understood that culture, if somebody came in there and garnered that respect, as a head coach, if they could tab the right offensive coordinator, tab the right defensive coordinator, probably hire a game manager, I think they could do it, to be honest.
So tell me exactly what the role of head coach entails, if it doesn't entail managing the game, if it doesn't entail dealing with the X's and O's of the offense and the defense and the details that go on in every one of those meeting rooms, if it doesn't entail hiring the offense and defensive coordinators from your vast pool of people that you know that are really good at being offensive and defensive coordinators, what exactly is the head coach
going to
do?
You're managing and you're basically being the final say in things. So an offensive coordinator.
So what are you going to have if you don't understand?
Todd Haley and Hugh Jackson can never get in a fight if Hugh Jackson knows nothing about offense and he just says, hey, Todd, do what you do. It's on you. The defense, Greg Williams will never get in a fight with the head coach if the head coach is like, yeah, that's your job. Make sure the defense is right. When it's not right, that's your ass. But that's just the basis of it. It's essentially managing.
So,
like, that's the problem with head coaches.
Basically, what he'd be doing is hiring another owner.
That have never been head coaches. They're too worried about the football side of it. I'm not saying it'll happen every time. I'm not saying it's the best option. I'm saying I think it's possible someone could come in with no coaching experience and be decent. What do you think, Condoleezza Rice? How many games do you think the Browns would win over a 2-year span with Condoleezza Rice?
You know, it's funny, Hawk. Going into this show, I thought that there was no way that anybody could possibly defend seriously hiring somebody that has no football background at all to be the head coach, but you actually have me thinking, like, this might work.
Tell me this. What is the worst that could happen?
They could be horrible and, what? And be 0-16.
It would be what? 0-16. Okay, you see where I'm going with this?
I think that the biggest issue, and I'm taking this far too seriously because it's not happening, but the biggest issue would be, like, from a accountability standpoint, if you're the head coach of the team, and let's say I'm Andrew Hawkins, and you are trying to motivate me, how are you going to motivate me if you don't know anything about the detail of what I do?
That's a good question.
Like, if you're the head coach and you're telling me you need to do this better or do that better, like, I'm going to listen. Like, that's an important part of being the head coach is you have the final say. You crack the whip. You're the one that decides if I'm on this team, largely, and I get to pay for my kid's private school education with this paycheck that I'm trying to make. And if this person has no ability to talk my language.
Who said they can't talk your language? I'm not making the case for Condoleezza Rice. I've made that very clear in my devil's advocate scenario. What I'm saying is someone with no coaching experience can be a head coach. That could be Joe Thomas. Are you telling me Joe Thomas doesn't know how to motivate a football team because he's never coached? No. Are you telling me Joe Thomas can't speak to what guys need to do, how they need to go about their business because he's never coached a team? No. He knows the game of football. He just hasn't been a coach.
Right. Okay, no, okay, I buy what you're saying. I thought you were kind of making more of a case for Condi, but what you're saying is if you have a big background in football, so you do know the X's and O's and you know the details on a good enough level where you can talk shop with the different guys.
Right.
But you've never been in a coaching role. I could get that. Like, for instance, Josh McCown, he's never been a football right. coach. He could easily step from on the field to being a head coach because he's basically been a coach for the last yeah. 10 years of his career.
He's the highest paid head coach in the league.
I could buy that. But yeah, but for Condi to step in and be the Browns head coach would be like me going from offensive lineman right to the CEO of Ford Motor Company.
I don't know what Condi's,
I don't know the first thing.
I don't know what Condi's football knowledge is, and neither do you. I'm not saying again, she's the one, but I'm saying, for instance, if you can command the respect of the guys, which is the most important thing. So, like, I'll give you an outside the box, not a former player, or I guess he is, but The Rock. The Rock could be a head football coach. He commands the respect of the guys. He's someone he'll listen to. He's motivating. He understands football because he played it prior to. He can beat up anybody, which is a very important role in commanding respect of a football game. So I'm saying, because he's never been a coach, I would still give The Rock an interview. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned The Rock. He's a huge fan of the Tomahawk Show. We'll have to bring him on and see what he says. But he does have an illustrious football career to fall back on. He played at the University of Miami. He was a defensive lineman. I'm not saying he was going to be an all-pro. There's a reason he's a wrestler, not a football right. player. But I still think, like, you have to have that detailed knowledge of the game to have the respect of the
but
players.
Why?
And you have to have been around the game more than a fan to have detailed knowledge of the game, whether that be like all the Patriots assistants. They weren't pro football players. They weren't even good college players, but they spent 10 years sleeping in their office under their desk, breaking down film and sitting in meetings and learning from Bill Belichick all the ins and outs of the game.
I'm not saying it's something you want to do. All right. But give me The Rock as a head coach, Sean McVay as the OC, and Greg Williams as the DC. Come on, that's playoff potential, buddy.
All right. Well, hey, fans out there, make sure you tweet us your thoughts on this topic about if you think you're on Hawk's side, where somebody that has never coached could be a great NFL coach, or sort of my side that I think you need a little bit more background to be getting the respect of the players to be able to be an effective head coach. So make sure you tweet us, hashtag Tomahawk. Let us know your thoughts.
Something right, tells me connect? My mentions are going to be blowing up off of this topic, but that's just a hunch. All right, we got Am I Tripping next, Zerb.
Yes, guys, it is time, as we do every Monday, for our award-winning segment of Am I Tripping?
Am I tripping?
Am I tripping?
Am I tripping?
Am I tripping, dog?
Am I tripping?
I gotta be tripping.
You tripping.
All right, guys, number one. Starting off with a guy I've been excited for this to have for this to happen all year, and finally Lamar Jackson gets to start an NFL game, coming in for the injured Joe Flacco. He ran for 117 yards. They beat the Bengals. The Ravens completely changed their offense. They had a touchdown drive where they ran the ball 11 straight times. They didn't throw a single pass, which is wild in 2018. So, guys, am I tripping, or should the Ravens just play Lamar Jackson for the rest of the season?
I think you're tripping, but Lamar did play really well. I don't know if that's sustainable, running the ball that many times. The quarterback who is not, like, stout. Like, if you watch Cam Newton, he looks kind of like Eric Weddle said, a fast dinosaur. He doesn't get hurt. Like, he can withstand that kind of pain and punishment. I don't know if Lamar Jackson can. But can I first point out that I told Joe that Lamar Jackson would start games as a rookie, and here we are.
Wow. Here we go. Hawk being a humble co-host again, telling us about how smart he is, how great he was at predicting Lamar Jackson to play. But no, my take on this is they got to go back to Joe Flacco. He gives them the best chance to win down the stretch. Now, if he doesn't do it this year, you can get rid of him and you can make Lamar Jackson the guy for the long term. But it's just not sustainable to run the ball almost 30 times. I think he had like 24 carries and he had three kneel downs at the end when they won. But this is what happens when you put a rookie quarterback in. It always happens. I've seen it a million times. I've lived it so many times. Is typically the first one or two outings, they actually play pretty well because defenses don't really know what they do. There's going to be a lot of new wrinkles, especially when you get a running quarterback like this. He's probably going to have 15 to 20 plays that this defense has never seen, that they have no concept of. They don't even know from a shift formation pre-snap read standpoint. And so they're completely caught off guard, and they're able to run the ball and kind of win these close
sock it out type games that they won against the Bengals. If you remember back a couple years when the Cleveland Browns were in their wonderful 1-15 campaign, Kevin Hogan came in against the same Cincinnati Bengals, rushed over 100 yards and almost won. Now, nobody at the time was saying Kevin Hogan should be their quarterback of the future because he wasn't a first-round pick. Now, Lamar Jackson was, so people are going to say naturally, because everybody's a conspiracy theorist these days, that Lamar Jackson is the better chance for the Ravens to win the rest of the season. But I'm not in that camp. Put Joe Flacco in the rest of the season. Give him the rest of the season to make or break his career in Baltimore. If it doesn't work, then you put Lamar Jackson in. But don't think he's going to rush for 117 yards every single week and they're going to be able to win a lot of games, because if they try it, he's going to get snapped in half.
Mm. So that's now two snapping in half references from Joe today. We're
I didn't say like a toothpick. I was thinking
you
about
did say a toothpick. I was good.
Snapped in half like a small Andrew Hawkins, but he's not small anymore. He's like 200 pounds of Mountain Dew and flab.
I know. It's terrible, man. It's really, I mean, the midsection. Woo. You ever walk by a mirror and say, who the fuck is that? And it's you. It's where I'm at in my life.
At home, I know that you guys love Andrew Hawkins, but he had this big modeling shoot. But notice it wasn't a body modeling shoot. It was a face modeling, because he's got this wrinkleless round face now. He's really filled it out. There's no more wrinkles because he's got a lot of extra chub, but there was no shirtless pictures in that photo shoot.
I know, man. I'm going to get him so many layers of clothes, too, just to make sure I was hiding
my sweaters.
My dad's
a lot of sweaters with blazers over the top.
It's all right. Some ladies like it. My wife in particular. Well, at least that's what she says to make me stop crying. What we got next here, Ferb?
All right, guys. So the Dallas Cowboys, after being left for dead a couple of weeks ago, they beat the Atlanta Falcons on the road yesterday. They are now 5-5. They're back in the playoff hunt. Ezekiel Elliott, 122 yards on the ground, had a touchdown. He's had about 3 weeks straight of playing really, really well. And the Cowboys' defense that Joe mentioned earlier is having themselves a season. So am I tripping, or are the Dallas Cowboys kind of back?
I hope not. I don't like the Dallas Cowboys for a lot of reasons. I just feel like this division sucks. So they might be back, but I hope not. Like, the Redskins lose Alex Smith. The Giants all of a sudden want to start playing halfway decent. The Eagles get embarrassed by the New Orleans Saints. They're still in the race. I still don't think they'll win the division, though.
Here's the thing with what Dallas is doing right now. They finally realized that Dak Prescott is not the quarterback that can just throw the ball 40 times and they can win. They've got a great running back in Ezekiel Elliott, a really good defense, and there is a legitimate opportunity with that formula to go on a little run like we saw the Jacksonville Jaguars last year, where you can win enough games to potentially put you in the Super Bowl and sneak a Super Bowl and win it, like we saw the Ravens do in, 2000 and whatever. But it is not sustainable for the long term. You've got to do it with offense, with passing, with a star franchise quarterback. And so I think right now in the interim, it makes sense. But don't expect us to say, hey, the Cowboys are back, that everything's okay in Dallas and things are going to be great for the long term, because they are not. They still need to figure out this quarterback position, because it is not looking pretty, even though they are winning.
All right, guys. Final am I tripping? And I love the chaos of the Oakland Raiders. Every day, every weekend, I tune in just to see what type of horrible thing is happening. So they get the win over the Cardinals yesterday. They get a last-second field goal, but it was not without drama. So Derek Carr, at one point in the game, called back-to-back timeouts, which you cannot do. So that is a flag. He goes over the sideline, and him and John Gruden get into a little bit of a yelling match. Derek Carr very animated with his hands. So guys, here's my question to you. Am I tripping, or are Derek Carr and John Gruden headed for an inevitable split at the end of this season?
Absolutely not, man. What you seen yesterday was a passing of the torch of power, the rite of passage to the throne that Derek Carr just took over in Gruden. It was Derek Carr, what they're calling a spat, was literally just Derek Carr turning around. His quote-unquote fight was him turning around saying, I tried, but he's a choir boy. So that was a big deal to everybody. They were like, what? You spoke back? And it was Derek Carr like, you know what, Gruden, I'm not letting you bully me anymore. I'm sick of your shit. I'm going to do things my way. They came back. They won the football game. And you're going to watch Derek Carr ball out for the rest of the year, because he's no longer scared of the bully that he stood up to in the lunchroom and said, no, you can't have my mashed potatoes. I love mashed potatoes, damn it.
And now
I like that take, Hawk. I like it, but
in the locker room, they're gonna be like, "Oh shit, look at Derek, man. That dude's swagged out. He's gonna be coming to game dressed like Odell, wearing man purses, 50 masks. It's gonna be lit."
Now, I agree with your take, but I'm gonna go with a little bit different reason why, because Derek Carr and John Gruden are not getting split because John Gruden is smart enough to realize that Derek Carr is a good quarterback and he is not going to be easily replaced. You can't just find franchise quarterbacks under a rock. You have to try to draft them because that's about the only way you can acquire them. And the draft is a crapshoot. Even though the Raiders have a ton of draft picks and they're going to have probably the number one, maybe number two pick in this offseason's draft, he realizes that he has to work with Derek Carr, and it's not a relationship that can be headed for a divorce, because even though John Gruden has the 10-year, $100 gazillion Tomahawk contract, he still can get fired, and he doesn't want that embarrassment, because at some point you got enough money and you're doing it for your legacy.
Hard to argue.
All right, guys, I think that just about does it for this episode of the Tomahawk Show. Make sure to tweet us using the hashtag Tomahawk. Make sure you guys go out there and give us that coveted 5-star rating. We're going on a new campaign to get that 5-star rating over 10,000. So don't forget to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Tomahawk Show. And I think the next episode, we are going to be talking NFL fantasy football with DraftKings. And actually, I think there's a little bit of a pivot the Tomahawk Show is doing. And Thursday is going to be more of a guest-driven show. So stay tuned at Tomahawk Show to see who the Thursday guest may or may not be. Hawk, you got any final thoughts?
I do have final thoughts, Joe, and I'm glad you asked. The Chicago Bears have only 85 hours in between their Sunday night football game and their Thursday morning Thanksgiving game. That's ridiculous. That's a little over 3 days. Could you imagine playing a whole game against the Minnesota Vikings in the freezing cold, then having to turn around, travel to Detroit? It's not even a home game. They're traveling to Detroit to play again on Thursday morning. Ridiculous on part of the NFL. I can't believe they let the scheduling go through like this. Yes, Chicago's going to get obliterated by the Detroit Lions because they're all tired still from just having got off a plane from the other game. That's my final thoughts.
All right. I love it. Natty, take us away.
Joe, hawk yourself.